And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance of goal, I said I'd stay going. So I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Welcome along to the GAA Hour. This is the Hurling Show on a Thursday. Cheddar's on the line. Cheddar, how's it going?
Very good, Willie.
You're on your own today, Cheddar. It's just me and you. I have to say, we have Lark Corbett coming up in part two, who's going to give us a lowdown on Tipperary versus Limerick. So me and you will just go through everything else, Cheddar.
Great stuff.
A few things I want caught my eye during the week here is, first one is Eamon Kelly, Leash manager. And it was just a quote that he made after the loss to Kerry. And he says, it's very difficult to put your finger on where it's going wrong. He said, we just seem to be tied up in our hurling. We're training hard. As long as I've been involved in hurling, I just can't figure out why it doesn't transfer from the training field to match day. And Cheddar, you've been involved in management. Have you ever felt like this, where you think things are going well in training? Because I can remember it when I was playing with Laois and Port Laois on some occasions, where it just isn't happening and nobody can quite understand why.
Look, that can happen. You know, Eamon is a very, very experienced manager. He's been involved with a lot of county teams and a lot of club teams. So he's a fair sense of what he's looking for here and that. But look, a lot of time that is down to, you know, the intensity of what you're getting in the training, you know, maybe not what it should be. And, you know, you may think it is, and it's hard to gauge at times. And the physical hurling and the work rate and the intensity, sometimes that's hard to measure, and you're going out the following Sunday and the other team have really upped their game and you're wondering, you know, why you're second to the ball and all of that. So it's difficult to gauge, and I'm not close to the Leash team at the minute, but I can understand Eamon's frustration sometimes like that. But I think generally speaking, it is down to, is your training intense enough, and you know, is it really championship verbal training of what you're getting? Because it is that, you know, it should be right and you should be able to transfer that on to field.
Yeah, and I don't want to be critical of Eamon Kelly here, because he's not the only manager I've heard kind of publicly say this, but I'm just wondering, as a player, reading your manager saying he's not sure what's going wrong, I don't know if it inspires confidence.
Well, look, there's two ways to that. Certainly with the modern player, don't bluff them and be honest with them.
Yeah.
And I think the second part of that is the most important part of your management process. The discussions and the communication between the management team and the team itself. And it cannot be just reactive. In other words, we just suddenly found this out that it's not working. That process has to be in place the whole time. And there has to be ongoing communication and discussion with the team in terms of the game plan, what's working, what isn't working, the feedback channels from team to management and management to team, and they need to be really, really high and working really, really well. And when they happen, and then a manager makes a statement like that, the team understands what's going on, because more than likely in the previous night or the previous week they've had a lot of discussions around that, and they're just finding it difficult to put their finger on one or two things. And sometimes in games, you know, you can get into a flow and things, I think the top coaches in all sports call it flow, and things fall for you and you wonder the following week, you know, why did it work well that game, it didn't work the week before. And sometimes there's a small little things that's difficult to actually find out. Now if they're big things, you would expect your management to grab them and fix them. But as I say, I go back to that point the whole time. It's the management process between players and team, and that has to be a two-way process for this to really work.
I noticed you say with the modern player, you can't kind of bullshit them. Have you noticed the difference in players maybe in the last 10 years to before that? Like, I mean, you know, you specifically said the modern player, you can't do that to.
I think, you know, you've got to recognise where everybody has come from. 10, 15 years ago, certainly with players in our division, you wouldn't have had a huge amount of them playing Fitzgibbon. I think 3 or 4 years ago, there was 9 Leash players on first Fitzgibbon teams. So they were being coached by top-class coaches, playing with top-class players, and understanding what makes top teams tick. We probably didn't have that level of knowledge and experience a long time before that. Our teams didn't have it. And, you know, bear in mind, considering the communication that's going on now, everybody has a fair sense of of the, you know, the innovations in coaching and all of that as they happen. Whereas years ago, you might have heard about it maybe 5 years after they happen, or if there's some big new thing, you might have heard it at the end of the year.
Yeah.
All of the players know that now. And you've got also bear in mind that I have a limited amount of experience here, and I'm drawn on a limited amount of experience in this particular area. But I would say we would have had maybe 3 or 4 players who were in the middle of strength and conditioning courses and all of that, are highly skilled and highly knowledgeable in what makes teams tick and what makes teams fit and all of those things. So players are much more knowledgeable now, both from their mingling with other players and other sports and seeing all of these things and having all the literature and all of that available to them than certainly they were in my day. But I'd also certainly say than they were maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah, no, okay, I would agree with all that. Another one, Damien Hayes was on to me during the week and he was giving out about how well Conal Keeney played. He's 35 years of age. He was absolutely outstanding. I think everybody would agree that was watching. He was brilliant. He was all over the place. And Damien was making the point to me, and I sensed it a little bit in my career as well, is that like Damien finished when he was 31, 32. Like, that was too young for Damien Hayes, but the attitude that when you're into your 30s, you're on borrowed time, and Conal Keeney is pretty much after blowing that wide open.
Yeah, first of all, hats off to Conal. I think it was an outstanding performance. I actually didn't realise he was 35. I probably had it in my head he was 33 or so.
Yeah.
But a couple of other things I think, Willie, that you've got there in mind on this. You know, Conal's, and I stand corrected on this, but this certainly was the case a couple of years ago. You know, Conal's day job, you know, is around sports and all of that. So he's a very good sense of, you know, how to keep his body right and keep fitness right and all of that. And he's probably the perfect person to be able to do this. He's also a big man, so look, he can take a little bit more buffeting and win more possession because of that. But I still think it was an incredible performance. I mean, bear in mind who he was on and that, and he literally obliterated him you know, was absolutely crucial to Dublin on the day. And if you ask me, if I was being really honest myself, I would have said beforehand that I'm not so sure it was a great idea for Conal to come back, but he blew that out of the water on the day. Now, it's a double-edged sword, unfortunately, for Dublin. Conal Keeney, if he's 35, can't go on to 37 or 40 playing at the level he's playing at. And if he was so central to Dublin last Sunday, you know, strategically, where are Dublin going for the next couple of years, if that's the case?
Yeah.
And I think that brings down to a sort of a separate discussion then, when a management team comes in, you know, what are you looking to do with this team? You know, are you looking at, you know, just immediate results, or are you looking at trying to build a team for Dublin or any other county here that's going to sustain performance and results over a number of years? And, you know, and again, of course, that drags you on to another thing then in terms of selection and management and all of those things, which again is a totally different discussion.
Well, you see, here's my take on this, is that I think Pat Gilroy, like, it could be very easy for Pat Gilroy to come in, and a lot of managers say this, Pat Gilroy's a dub and he wants Dublin to do well this year. I think a lot of managers, especially outside managers, can often come in and bring on a whole lot of young lads and get rid of some of the old lads, and then say we have a 3-year plan. Now, we all know outside managers a lot of the time are getting paid, so they're guaranteeing themselves 3 years by discarding older fellas and bringing in young fellas, and it's a 3-year plan. Whereas Pat Gilroy has put a lot of stock in an old dub and brought him back. Have you ever thought of it like that?
Yeah, look, there's pros and cons for both, I suppose. Look, I think it's different if you had a successful team at the minute, that you're patching things as you're going along just to keep success. But, you know, where Dublin are, they need to build success, I would think. And, you know, obviously not Dublin, a lot of other teams as well. So you need to look at it a little bit more long-term, I think, than that. It's unlikely you're going to come from nowhere and win an All-Ireland, if that's your ultimate goal here. And it probably is a 2-year plan. Incidentally, I don't really believe that. I think there are probably some managers, but certainly not at the top level, or certainly not any of the managers that I know, that would go in with a sort of a false proposal that, look, it's going to take me 3 years here to do what I want to do, and in other words, I'll soak up what I can over 3 years here, and I'll be out the door at that stage. I don't know any of the managers that would actually approach it like that. They genuinely, and I think, would look at it, and properly would look at it, in terms of what players have I available to be at the minute, what young players are coming through in the county, and you know, where can I go? What's the history within the county? And any of the top managers, I think, would look at that. And to be honest with you, any county board that would go away and select a manager or look for a manager that weren't asking those type of questions of the county board back would have serious concerns about that manager, in my view. So I think that's an easy out for some people. It may happen at the lower levels, but I can guarantee you, I don't think there's any manager would commit so much to a county. And I know an awful lot of managers don't get paid at all. They just simply do not get paid, or doing it because they love the game and all of that. Why would you do that? Just run a strategic plan over 3 years just for the sake of it. There has to be some knowledge base behind it.
Right, I am a very cynical type, though, Cheddar. It's a character flaw. I can't help it.
I need to change you into positivity here now, Willie.
No, I don't want to know about positivity. I'm a glass half empty. Would you believe, actually, Damien was telling me Conal Keeney is a year older than Damien Hayes. Isn't that mad? They played minor, so Conal was a year obviously ahead of him at minor. Like, I mean, you never would have thought that.
Yeah, no, I've gone back a number of years, and obviously, you know, you'll be looking forward to the match at the weekend as well in Wexford in Dublin. You know, Conal has been a central part of Dublin hurling since he went to Dublin hurling, and I certainly was at the match in Wexford Park. It was a Saturday evening. It was a replay when he just completely dominated Wexford. And without him, Dublin wouldn't have won. Even though they won comfortably that evening, without him, they wouldn't have won. And he's a central part of Dublin, has been for a number of years. But I think it was a massive achievement on his behalf to be able to come, having been out of hurling for a number of years. Bear in mind, he scored 4 points from play. It wasn't just that he had a hard graft physical performance. He also scored, so his skill levels were also high. I think it was an incredible performance. I think we all know, having gone through that, you know, once you go into your early 30s, just things slow down a little bit. I think you're dependent a lot then on your reading of the game and your understanding of game management and all of those things to make up for the little lack of fitness and quickness that you have. But I just think it was an incredible performance where he was coming into the team. And you've got to also bear in mind that he had left the team, you know, last year or the year before, and probably felt he, when he was coming back in here, you know, I owe something here, and he certainly delivered on that.
Yeah, no, he definitely did. Austin Gleeson has been in the media during the week. I think he was on Off the Ball, and he was talking about last year and his performances last year, and he was talking about the awards that he got. He obviously got Player of the Year, and he's very honest, and we know Austin Gleeson is very honest when he's interviewed. He says, I suppose there was so much around the awards. I shouldn't have got it, I should have got it, different things like that. I wanted to prove a point then the following year that I was good enough that year and deserved the awards. It just didn't happen. No matter what I tried, it just didn't come off for me. And like, I mean, the chap is so young, like he's 21 and he's Player of the Year and Young Player of the Year, and the burden that carried on top of him the following year, like, I don't think people appreciated that. Number one, when they were debating all this kind of circus around whether he should have got Player of the Year, Seamus Callanan, and people saying, you know, obviously it was played out, a lot of it online and in the media. He's only 21, you know, and it obviously had a big effect on him, that big debate, whether he even deserved it or not.
Yeah, I think it can play on players' minds and that, but I think your management and that, you know, kind of a great role to reduce that on the player and that as well. I think these are all good things you're hearing from Austin, really. Like, he has, you know, high ambitions for himself and for his team. He's disappointed when he doesn't reach those high standards that he sets for himself. And all great players have that mindset about him. We also know that in different years and from game to game, sometimes your just performance might drop, and sometimes you're working equally as hard in the second game as you are in the first, but for some reason you just aren't where the ball is and that, and you know, you can become quite frustrated by that. And I think the management team and your colleagues around you are really, really important to you at that stage. At the end of the day, it is a team game, and they're really, really important to you just to keep your focus, keep your confidence going during those little points. Because if you were good last year, you are still good this year. It's just the flow may not be running for you or something like that. And I think, I'll just go back to that point, I think all great sports people, not necessarily players, have that frame of mind. they want to, they have really, really high standards for themselves in everything that they do, and they will scratch every inch of the way to try and achieve those high standards. And when things don't happen for them, they can become a little bit frustrated sometimes by that. But there's no doubt about it, he will be back. And I'm not saying he was ever away, by the way. He will be back to that standard again. He's just a superb hurler.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Maybe even Dan Shanahan would probably be able to help him psychologically about stuff like that, or even a phone call to Joe Canning, who had an awful lot of pressure on his shoulders very, very early in his career.
I think that's exactly what I'm talking about here, and it's just that little reassurance, I suppose, really. And I think the critical part about that, of course, is you're assuming at that stage that the analysis of his hurling and his hurling performance has been gone through with him. In other words, he's not doing things that he shouldn't be doing, or something like that. You know, you're assuming that the management team over Waterford or whoever have, and I know a small little bit about Derek and the depth that he would go into for these things, so I can say with certainty that has happened. But having done all of those things, in other words, having reviewed the process and his place in the team and his role in the team, his performance of that role, things still can just not flow for you. And sometimes a little bit of reassurance with that, just hold the nerve, these things will come right again in time.
Yeah, exactly. Another quick one here, Conor McDonald was talking during the week, and he was talking about free taking. And you know, I think he's been up and down a little bit in recent times on the frees. Actually, Wexford share around the frees an awful lot, don't they? Lee Chin, Morris,
yeah,
and Conor McDonald, whether that's helpful or not to a specialised free taker. But he's saying,
I think O'Connor has taken over free taking.
Oh, Rory O'Connor, yeah.
The minute.
Yes,
yeah.
Could be gone off them altogether.
But go ahead. Yeah.
So Conor is saying, I wouldn't say it's an added pressure. I actually think free taking is a separate game. I think your mindset has to be completely different. So we all know you could be having a stinker out the fielder in general play, and you're still expected to turn around and hit the free over the bar, whereas you could have hit three wides from play. So as a free taker, you need to be in the mindset of playing two completely different games. And I never really thought about that for free takers, because I never was accurate enough to take them. But it's almost like the whole psychology of being a free taker. You cannot, it's like a golfer coming off a double bogey and standing up on the next tee box, and they're able to wipe that double bogey out of their mind, whereas like the likes of me or you would be still cursing themselves. It's that psychology, which I think must be really, really difficult, to park a bad game in normal play and still be able to take your frees. He says they're two completely different games.
I think you're absolutely right in that. I think the free take, and there are obviously close relationships here, and I'll just talk about that in a second, but just your technique, it's all about technique in the free take, and your footwork, your body movement, your strike, and all of those. Once you have perfected that, you don't move away from it. And you know, all of the top golfing coaches will tell you the same thing, and the free takers are doing the very same thing. And sometimes you see free takers with different styles, but they do the same thing the whole time. So it's just focus on the process of taking the free and pop it over the bar. Now, I do think there are a lot of players that are free takers that when they're free taken is good for them, and they feel good about it. It gives them confidence about general play.
Yeah.
I think that relationship is definitely there. You know, and I know there are other players that are different. They, you know, they don't need the freeze to give them that little confidence to get on the ball. I suppose freeze is getting on the ball, it's getting your strike away, it's practicing your strike and all of that. And like all of the top forwards, they would pay so much detail to even, you know, their strike in the game, not necessarily on the free, that, you know, the free taking is just an extension of that to give them a little bit more self-belief and confidence. And when they're after popping over a couple of pints, all the other sort of things flow for them then. So I can understand, you know, in how he has discussed that pint.
I'm actually glass half empty here again. I'm thinking of the bad effect it can have. It obviously, you can be playing bad in play, in general play, and knocking over the frees, and it can nearly play yourself back into the game just true free. So there obviously is a flip side to that then as well.
Yeah, no, there is. And look, you're going into another area then around, you know, mental toughness and mental hardness, and being able to block out all of that, and the techniques to be able to block out that. And this is where the sports psychologists really come into their own. Because a lot of the rest of us just don't know the techniques of how to do it. How do you block out all of the things that's going to affect your performance over a free? I think once you get all of those aspects right and you're coached in all of those areas, well, you know, you'll build up the mental toughness to be able, and also to be able to separate your gameplay from your free taking play. And I think once you get all of that right, then, you know, you're coming back to what Conor is referring to then.
Yeah, exactly. Great stuff, Cheddar. Right, up next, we're going to talk to Lark Corbett about the Tipperary Limerick game.
let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans.
All right, delighted to say Lark Harbert is on the line now, and take a look ahead to Limerick and Tipperary at the weekend. But before we start, here's a little message Lar left me a couple of hours ago.
Colin, will you just send me on a text there of a few, maybe a list of the questions there for later on, and I'll do a bit of a kind of bit of research, and I'll kind of do a bit of looking into it here for, and I know what kind of angle that you're coming from. I just up at a show here in Belfast since Saturday, but if you send in a text, I'll see it, and I'll talk to you at 3 o'clock.
Two things I'm taking from that audio, Lar, is where the hell are you, and isn't it great that you look for the questions so that you can do a bit of research? If only all pundits were like you.
Yeah, well, I suppose I'm up here in Belfast, and we're at the Balmoral show, and for anybody that I suppose hasn't been at the Balmoral show, it's the equivalent of the Ploughing down the south.
Right.
Similar attendances, and it's a 4-day show, and we bring up the sports company up here, so yeah, it does well for us, but it's enjoyable. Then we get a few nights out in Belfast as well.
Sounded like you were on a night out leaving that voicemail, but it was at 11 or 12 o'clock in the day.
Yeah, no, there's a few music stands beside us, and there's a bit of entertainment where we are, so it's actually good. We're in a good area.
Right, okay, come here, let's talk about this game at the weekend then, Tipperary and Limerick. And I want to talk to you about the rivalry first, because even when Limerick aren't quite at Tipperary's level, they always seem to be able to match Tip.
Yeah, I suppose they do match Tip as regards their intensity. Yeah, intensity, and I think their work rate. I think they really come up, even though, as you say, if they're not able to match just a Tip, they definitely with their work rate and intensity is definitely something that they're able to come up. And that is back even when I first came across Limerick back around 2000-2001, there was never really much in it. And then I suppose when Babs Keaton was there in 2006, there was the 3-game thriller, so they've always been able to do that, and they've great confidence even coming to Turles to play Tip. They don't mind playing Tip, and I think that is going to be It's tougher down there. And really where I think where Limerick are going to get their bit of confidence is the league semi-final. Like, that game went extra time. A lot of people were thinking that Tip were going to win that handy, but Limerick really came there and they really put it up to Tip that day, and deservedly so.
They did, yeah. I was reading Brendan Cummins there during the week, and he was saying the Gaelic grounds can be a very intimidating place, that when Limerick give the crowd something to shout about, even on the seated terrace, they're stand up on the seated terrace, and it can be intimidating.
Yeah, but I think that there's a lot of fees. Like, Nolan Park have it when you play Kilkenny down there. Like Limerick have it, like Cork have it. They all have that, and that's part of the Munster Championship, as every team and the supporters believe that they can win in any given day. And I think that really comes from where Munster hurling. That's why the tens are up, and that's why the crowds go to these games, because they know, even though if you didn't have a great league campaign, they do know when it comes to the Munster Championship that things do change.
So what's the feeling in Tip? We've talked about Tip a bit during the league, and everybody knows they tried out a lot of lads. They had some injuries, and Michael Ryan was very consistent about trying lads up, and the try lads like didn't have their strongest team right up to the final. So we know he's found some new players, but we're not just sure if these new players are good enough to get on the team when the Noel McGraths, the Callanans, the Bonner Mars, the Dan McCormicks, when all these lads come back.
Yeah, if you ask anyone around Tip at the minute, what is the team going to be? You could ask 20, 30 people. The 20, 30 people, I don't think anyone will pick the same team. And that's Tip. don't have a settled team going into the first round of the championship, yeah. And that's where I'm kind of, as a supporter, Tipperary supporter, a little bit worried. And you do talk to people that are close enough to the setup, and everyone has their different ideas. But like the word on the street at the minute there is that Brian Hogan is going to start in goal. That's what they're saying now. I don't think Brian started the semi final, or he started the final.
No, he didn't start the final anyway. Darren Mooney started the final. Yeah. So he tried. It was actually interesting with the goalkeepers in the league part. He gave all three goalkeepers 2 games each, but then Maloney obviously got in for the final.
Yeah.
Or Mooney,
so
sorry.
So that's just a small bit. And I did like the way that Rowan Amar was playing midfield in the league this year. And what I liked about him is that he had a small bit more freedom, that he didn't have to man mark. So up as far as the league final, I should say. But he was getting his few points from play. He was pushing forward, and Ronan is a very, very good sticks man. He can get his scores from midfield on the run. I liked a bit of him then is that he was standing over the sidelines. I think he could have got maybe 3, if not 4 sidelines, but he was going up to the half forward line taking him, so he didn't have to get back and mark a wing forward just as straight away. So to me he was able to express himself more than I had seen before, and I really like that because I do think that he's a serious, serious sticks man, and I love to see him play in midfield. So there's a few changes, like Shamie Callan has missed all the league. Bobbles has played in and out a few games. I don't think he started any. So there's going to be a toss between Shamie and Bobbles if one of them going to start. That's they're saying that 2 aren't going to start.
Right.
So that's what I'm saying, is Tip's team is just not fully settled. I'm a little bit worried, a little bit nervous of it, because I think that the first games in Munster are very, very important to get that winning start, to get on that winning streak.
Just going back to the Ronan Marr one, because he really is an interesting one, and I agree with you. He was one of the players of the league in midfield, and then unusually for the final then he was moved back into the half-back line, so I'm not really sure what Michael Ryan's thinking there was.
Yeah. So I think that he was put into the half-back line to man-mark TJ Reid that day. And that's fine, because, look, you have to give respect, and TJ Reid is probably one of the best hurlers in Ireland at the minute. But what we were doing, we were losing Ronan's ability to set up ball into the full forward line, getting his 1 or 2 scores from play, getting his sideline. So just say, I found him that he had more to offer Tip pushing forward, going forward, and that's why I was really... And he's my own club man, and I suppose...
Yeah.
We're going to talk about him a little bit more, but I really, really like the way he plays midfield. And you could talk to a lot of forwards, club and county, they love the way that Ronan delivers a ball into a full forward line. He gives a lovely weighted ball, and he's really trying to give the 70-30 pass in favour of his man instead of a 50-50. So they love how he can read the game, and that has been a thing that we would have talked about in Turles Arses for since he was very young, is how he gives the ball in and how he thinks about the full forward line.
Right, okay, that's interesting. And obviously the sidelines, which he was so brilliant at, that's an interesting thing, that when he's in the half-back line, obviously it's too big of a risk to come up, and if you knock one down or don't get a good connection, then you're wide open, or else you have to rejig your team all around to have your man covered, and it's a bit kind of maybe too much hassle.
It is, and like, you know, if you're playing wing back and just say the ball goes out for a sideline up wing forward, a forward that's close enough to it might fancy his chances, and he might have the ball in his hand. And sometimes there's extra pressure then if you're going up taking the ball off somebody, or you're asking for it, now you're actually saying that you're going to put it over. So there's a psychological thing in that as well, when you do kind of push up. But if he was actually in that position close enough to it, I just prefer that the ball goes out, Ronan gets it, puts it down, and he puts it over the bar. And he has a fairly high percentage rate of putting them over. And I'd see him inside training, even with Turles Arses after training, he'd no problem putting 3 and 4 in a row over. Now, I know it's in training, but, like, you know, he's a serious, serious talent, and he has it mastered.
You mentioned it'll be down between Callan and Bubbles. And why is that? Because Callan's not match fit, and Bubbles' maybe work rate might not be what other players are, or is that what it's coming down to?
Yeah. To be honest, I don't know. It's just that just say listen to people that are talking close enough to the circle. They're saying it's actually going to come down just between Bubbles and Shamie Callan. That is looking like the both of them won't start. Who will start? I don't know. Tipperary had 15 and 15 behind closed doors last Sunday. Not much news came out of it. Just that they look like that Brian Hogan was going to start in the goal. That's what they're saying. But as I said, there's no real settled team in Tipperary as such.
Right. Okay. What's Brian Hogan bring to the table? Like, is he a puck out specialist, or is he, you know, has he a big booming puck out, or what would his strengths be?
To be honest, I don't know. I just know that after Darren Gleeson kind of just retired last year, the door was open for anyone just to really take it. And we were kind of, I suppose, so used to having Brendan Cummins in goal for 20 years. It was a name that was put down in the on the team sheet, and everyone else then. But now, like, you know, the goalie is kind of, it's not as settled as it was. And goalies coming into championship matches, like, you know, you have to come in with your confidence. You have to come in as regards your confidence has to be high. Like, you know, if you are a settled, if you have been playing all the league, and now it's just a matter of just bringing your league form into championship. But this is not, because, as you said, the three goalies got three games between them, and it's going to be very, very interesting on Sunday how, just say, Brian does start, like, just say, how that he develops into the game, because, you know, there's going to be a bit of pressure there.
Yeah. Do you know, Jason Ford's obviously been so good in the league and been outstanding and deserves a shot at number 14, but I always find it very funny how soon you're forgotten in hurling and in Gaelic football. The Shane McAllenan's been injured, and now all of a sudden his number 14 jersey is gone just because he's missed a few games. We're talking about a full forward who's won Player of the Year, and who's won, who's cleaned out JJ Delaney, and who's ran amok in All Ireland finals, and suddenly his number 14 position now, supporters say, are gone because Jason Ford had a good league. Like, I mean, what's your take on that number 14 jersey, and what's your take on the full forward line if everybody's flying fit?
So I definitely do believe when you're gone for a few games, yeah, things change, and I think that's the nature of the game. That's the nature of the GAA. You're missing for a length of time, yeah, you will be forgot about very, very quick, and we all go through that, and that's fine. But you have to remember, no matter what was done in the league, people will judge on Championship hurling. So no matter what anybody thinks they've done in the league, it's great for confidence as an individual. It's great to get your team settled, but everyone will have a different opinion after the game in Limerick, again Limerick, of what they think about each individual player. So no matter what, just say, as an individual, you mentioned Jason Ford, no matter what he done in the league, it will count for nothing if the performances don't come in again Limerick. And that has been always the way, and I think that's fair enough too. We all went through that. You're judged on Championship hurling,
yeah.
So you really have to bring your form in to the Championship. And Jason Ford had an excellent league. He has been playing the best I've ever seen him, and I hope that he brings that form into the Championship, because he deserves it. He's been knocking on the door a good few years now. He's had the best league campaign he's ever had for Tip. Now we just need to transfer that in, just a two limit, and some part of me believes that he will, and there's a small bit of hope as well. I hope he does, because he deserves it. He's been really, really he's been consistent for every league match just said this year.
Yeah, no, there has. And so can him and Shamie play together? Like, can Shamie play in the corner? I always see Shamie, he started as a wing forward, then centre, and then full. I've never really, can he operate in the corner and Jason Ford at full, or would you swap it the other way around?
Yeah, I'd have no problem playing both. And I think the way the forwards has gone now, people have to get out of their mind that they're a corner forward, or they're a full forward, or a centre forward. It's about movement, it's about getting onto ball, and it's about working as a team with each other. So you're switching and you're moving all the time. So people can't get hung up about, I'm in the corner. Like, you know, you'd often see a full forward, if it's Jason, he can get the ball out in the wing, he get two points from the wing. The wing forward can end up full. So it's about movement, it's about getting yourself into position, and it's about just working together as a forward unit. I always like to say, lads, it's a forward unit. It's not that you're a lad has in his mind he's not a corner forward.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I remember you telling me before about Eamon O'Shea, like, being really good at coaching, that kind of a thing. And just mentioning all that movement and forward play and everything, like, Paul Kinnerk is with Limerick, and you can see his print all over this Limerick team. Like, I mean, you mentioned movement in the forwards. One thing that's very noticeable of them is their movement, and is their movement across the lines, and is the ball that they're getting in there. They look like a forward line that is on the same page.
Like, they are moving, and they're moving well, and they're fast, and they're nifty.
Yeah.
And that's why when it comes to Limerick, like, just say, the ground's after harding up over the last maybe 4 or 5 weeks, it's going to be a different game. And the and Championship hurling is different, because you're going away from your soft, slow fields. And just say, talking about Limerick, like, what I see, they've Declan Hannan got in centre back, and he's kind of orchestrating exactly what's going on. His troops around him. So I see there Keane Lynch then sits in front of him. Keane Lynch will probably start midfield, but he plays between midfield and his own centre back, and
yeah,
he picks up a lot of ball around the half back line. I think that Keane Lynch and Declan, they are going to have to be watched as regards this. It's like a seventh defender coming in, helping out. So that's going to be a very, very important role, whoever picks up and is watching that. They can't be left dictate. I think it's Aaron Gillan is the guy, the new guy in with white helmet. He's taking the freeze. And so there's responsibility with him there as well. And he seems to be going well. A lot of talk then, just say in tip is like, just say the weak link for Limerick full back line, like is Richie English. So who's going to take him up on Sunday is going to be very, very interesting. Like, you know, you do get balls into that full forward line. If it is Shane McCallan inside, if it is Jason Ford inside, the ball has to come into that full forward line to create goal opportunities.
So what would you say is Richie English's weaknesses then? He's a small enough fellow, but he's a tigerish enough cornerback in the air maybe.
Yeah, so I do think that Tip are going to try and target Richie on Sunday. So I'm very, very interested to see who goes on him and what way they play that.
Okay, that's an interesting one. And just, you mentioned Keane Lynch. Like, is this the Michael Ryan has kind of experimented with Cathal Barrett in midfield? Would this be the perfect game for Cathal Barrett to play midfield and maybe do a little bit of a marking job in Keane Lynch?
I think that they're going to start Billy McCarthy and they're going to start Brendan Maher midfield. Billy McCarthy is another Thurles Arses club man. Like, you know, he's been playing very, very well, just say, in the league this year, and he's a big, big, strong guy.
Yeah.
So it's going to be his first championship start. So I hope that he's there, and I hope that things go well for him. Just to answer your question about Cathal Barrett, they haven't started him in any kind of, just say, cornerback position this year. He has brought him on midfield. I think that Cathal Barrett is one of the best cornerbacks in Ireland, and I think that it's more of a cornerback. I'd like to see him in the full back line, because I think that he's very, very hard to turn, and if he does get turned, he's very, very quick to get back to counteract if there is a mistake made.
Right, okay. So what's the mood like in Tipperary, Lar? We know Tipperary supporters, they're very demanding, and that's putting it mildly. So, like, I mean, what are the expectations of this team? Like, I mean, like you said, nobody's sure of the team. Are Tipperary fans a little bit wondering where they are right now?
To be fair to Mick Ryan, he gave 33 players their chance in the league this year.
Yeah.
You can't ask, and you can't be any more fair than that. His system got him to a league final. Yeah, okay, the guys didn't play as well as they could have in the league final, and that's fine, you had it. But Mick Ryan would have learnt an awful lot about his team. And I like, just say, Páraic Maher, if he's playing, just say, wing-back or centre-back. Like, you know, he's great. He's a huge, huge figure there. I think that Tip will be ready. I think that they know in the league final that they didn't play as well as they could have, and I think Tip are ready. Just to answer your question, just say about the Tipperary supporters, that they're very demanding. Yes, they are, and I think they're entitled to be, and they're right. And I'm a supporter now. Yeah, we are. We want to win because we think we're good enough to win. And I think the players are there. I think there's a good, strong panel there. It's just about trying to get it right now. You just need to get it, because there's not much room for error, because when it comes to the championship there, like, you know, it comes and goes very, very quick. So I think that Tipperary people are quietly confident.
Okay, Lar, that's great stuff. Come here, I'll let you back to your sales there up at this the ploughing.
Thanks very much, Colin. Thank you.
Wake up, rise and shine. Winter's gone and summer's fine. Wake up, wake up, wake up, rise and shine.
Alright, Cheddar, we'll go through a few of the games here and we'll get your predictions on them and how you see them going. Like, Wexford Dublin has turned into an absolutely fantastic game. Like, Dublin, well, I would say they surprised everyone, but in fairness to yourself, and I'm going to give myself credit as well, Damien might have given them less of a chance, but we gave them a great chance, and it was heartbreak. I felt heartbroken for them, we're saying on the show on Monday. But, like, I mean, Brendan Cummins on the Sunday game said that the best thing for Dublin now is another game next week. And I was reading Owen Kelly during the week from Tipperary, and he was saying this game's coming a bit too soon for Dublin. They're going to be devastated after that loss. And which of them are right? Nobody, it'll be hindsight which will tell us which one is right.
Look, some of these things are difficult to predict, but you've got to look at the, you know, what are the reasons, for Owen or for Brendan saying these things. And I think there are some significant things about the match on Sunday. Incidentally, I think it's how each county prepares to get through the four games and how psychologically they would have prepared back last January and February. And again, I'm going back to the management and the team. What were the discussions about how they're going to handle each game? Because it really has got to get down to, if we're going to put everything into each game and we'll get the best result we can out of that, we'll take our learnings out of that game, and then we're finished with that game and we focus on the next game. And if there's residue over a game or something like that, and it's allowed to stay in the camp and there's a bit of an energy sucking about that, then you're in a little bit of trouble for the following Sunday. This is where I think the likes of the Pat Gilroy's and the Brian Coates and those really, really come into their own, their experience of how to handle these things well in advance of the week of the game, I think is really, really critical. But I think there's some playing issues as well in the Dublin-Wexford game. I think the game plan that Dublin had last Sunday of obviously playing a sweeper, obviously going long to a big man in the full forward line, may very well play right into Wexford hand next Sunday. Liam Rush is not going to put Liam Ryan back in his backside, and he definitely will not put Matthew O'Hanlon back in his backside like he did last Sunday.
Yeah.
So what happens next, I suppose, then is the age-old question. And equally, I was surprised last Sunday that after about 5 minutes, it was very obvious what Dublin were doing. But it was very one-dimensional. Get the ball, win the ball strong on the half-back line, and put it into the kitchen. Big man, either win the ball cleanly, turn and take on the man and create runners, or the ball will break with men coming through. And I was just really, really surprised that, obviously Kilkenny then had a free man in their own defence. And, I'd be very surprised if Davey and JJ and Parik don't figure this out for next Sunday. And Sean Murphy, once the ball is in the air, Sean Murphy will sprint in front of Rush's and stand right in front of Liam Rush and stop his run to the ball. And at the very least, they'll break the ball to the floor for a rook ball, 2-1, and there's only might be one winner there. So I just think that Wexford, obviously the game's at home, it's an advantage to them, but they've seen Dublin, and I'm not too sure that Dublin would be able to change an awful lot. I mean, they kind of changed their style of play now. They were successful last Sunday. If Conal Keeney's playing, they're likely to go with the same manner of play. But I think to win the game, they'll need to come with something different and maybe a little bit more variation, really, on the way that they're playing. But they have a week to do it. So have them practice different variations over the last couple of weeks with sort of Wexford in mind. I think they are the questions.
Yeah. Maybe you think Dublin focused nearly all their game plan on beating Kilkenny rather than looking across the four games, maybe?
Well, I'd be surprised if that's the case. I don't know, but there's a very experienced management team in place there, and I would think that they looked at all of the games. I mean, generally speaking, how you would look at this is you'd look at your last team first and figure out how you're going to play against them and give a small little bit of time to that, a little bit more time to the third team and so on up along the line. And then, of course, you want to focus fully on the team that you're going to play next Sunday. But you have some homework done on your second, third and fourth teams, and you just keep an eye on them. Do they change, or do we need to do anything now to adjust or something like that, including your own game plan? But I think I'd struggle a little bit to see how Dublin will change their game plan for next Sunday. And like, Conal Keeney is going to be on Matthew O'Hanlon, and I wouldn't like to be between the two of them. I certainly wouldn't like to be between the two of Rush and Ryan. Liam Ryan.
They're going to be great matchups.
I think they'll be massive matchups, but what can Dublin do a little bit different here to get a little bit more out of their game plan that they had last Sunday? And I think they will have to come with something slightly different to actually go win the game.
I think that what Dublin had was the element of surprise. Well, they did have the element of surprise, and they didn't, because they played Owen O'Donnell, obviously went on TJ Reid, and Moran went back sweeping, but they flagged that up so obviously when they named their team by picking Owen O'Donnell in midfield. Like, I could predict exactly what they were going to do by seeing that. So they almost flagged this up to Kilkenny. And then usually Kilkenny play Buckley as their sweeper, but Buckley marked Keeney. So Kilkenny were probably confused about who to put sweeper, because it was a midfielder left free. So, like, I mean, you'd almost be critical of Kilkenny for not adapting to that. And you're right, the point you make is right. Davey will be very quick to be able to switch his midfielder to wing back and then get Sean, and release Sean Murphy into his sweeping position.
Yeah, and I just go back to your point. I was really surprised that at Kilkenny. First of all, for not releasing Buckley to be the sweeper. And, you know, bear in mind, he was being well beaten by Conor Keeney at this stage. He's a very, very quick player, very efficient player, but a very accurate striker of the ball. And, you know, why they didn't make him sweeper? And, I mean, after 2 minutes, it was obvious these were going to be rain and high balls down in Liam Rush. And generally speaking, your sweeper, his starting position is the middle of the D. So it allows him that angle left or right to be able to mop up the ball that's coming over the top into the corner. But it also allows him then to be you know, centre of defence to pick up men running through the middle.
Yeah.
But in once you see the high ball coming over like that, you'd be instructing your sweeper at that stage that the minute the ball is struck from Chris coming to half-back line, back in that 10 metres in front of Liam Rush, stop him from his run from going, create a rook ball on the ground and win the ball, and now you have a 2-1 to work it out of the defence. And I was really surprised at some of the things Kilkenny did, you know, in terms of just, you know, letting that happen for a long time. And it wasn't that it was hurting them. It wasn't that it wasn't hurting them. It was actually hurting them at the time.
Yeah.
So look, I was surprised at a couple of those things. And I was really surprised that, I think, you know, looking back at Kilkenny, you know, I think we've all commented, everybody has commented that they're changing their game a little bit. But, you know, are they caught now a little bit in a sort of a precision possession game versus hitting it long? Because a lot of people lauded Paul Murphy when he came on the field, and he definitely did tighten things up and won possession. But I think for an experienced player, he grabbed two or three balls and lamped them straight up to the Lewis man, the far side. And you know, you'd be lauding Kilkenny for their innovation and their quickness to spot and fix something at times. But I was actually surprised. I think the game last Sunday was a terribly exciting game. But to be honest with you, a lot of the tactical stuff and a lot of the technical stuff was poor. And I don't know how many times I've seen a couple of Kilkenny players, maybe two or three times, rolling the ball into the hand. And it's so untypical of them. And you know, so it's hard to gauge the judgment. It's hard to judge Dublin's performance last Sunday, where Kilkenny genuinely caught off guard and played poorly. It's hard to judge that.
Yeah, so when your confidence is low, you'll roll the ball into your hand, whereas if it's high, you'll just jab it up into your hand.
Well, it's just so untypical for those players to take a second touch on the ball to get it into their hand. It is just so untypical of players at that level. And it happened a number of times. And so tactically and technically, I was just surprised with some of the things. And I suppose there was a couple of other little things spilled out of it for me as well. I mean, JJ mentioned last week that, you know, after the league final, they'll definitely leave Parry full back at this stage, that discussion is over. Well, it's definitely over after last Sunday, because if Brian didn't move Tarek after last Sunday, he's not going to move him.
Yeah, no, geez, it was surprising that he left him so long. One thing that we will be sure of this Sunday is that Lee Chin's going to have Owen O'Donnell following him around the pitch no matter where he goes, because he's obviously as central to Wexford as TJ Reid is to Kilkenny, and plays a similar role probably for Wexford as well. So, like, is that something Davey's going to flag up in advance and play Lee Chin on the full forward line? Would Davey change things that close to a game based on what he saw last week from Dublin?
I think he would, provided it didn't mess up his own game plan too much. You know, if you were to do something radical that really confuses your own players, well, then don't do it. But, you know, you just asked a question about Lee Chin. I think you could play Lee Chin anywhere from 5 to 15, and he will certainly give you a fair shift. So if he's a really important player to your team, and look, Micheál Donoghue, I think, does it with Joe Canning very, very well. You know, the team needs to know that Lee Chin is going to be moved around the field here, different positions at different stages of the game, just simply not to allow that happen, to allow him be man-marked out of the game by a really good man marker. So you could see Lee Chin in the full forward line. You might then see him a wing forward. You might see him back out at midfield, and you're wondering why is he, you know, being shoved around the field, you know. And generally speaking, I think managers would look at that, and management teams would look at that. If these two or three players are so central to my team, how can I move them around the field before the other team gets a foothold on them? And how can I move them around within my own game plan to try and keep them free? And, you know, Davey definitely would be looking at that.
Yeah, in a word, who do you think's going to win that one?
I think Wexford will win it. And I think it's not, you know, I just heard so many generalisations, even the generalisation last Sunday of Kilkenny always win it. You know, you've got to look at, I don't know, why did they win it? And I think in this instance, I think Wexford have the ideal antidote to the way Dublin played last Sunday. I don't think Dublin will be able to come with a different game plan next Sunday. And if that's the case, I think Wexford would have to win at games at home and that as well. And I think the loss to Kilkenny and Wexford Park hurt Wexford and would have hurt Davy. And I think that might be an extra little spur. On the other side of that, Dublin have a really good record against Wexford. And I think they've maybe beat them the last five championship matches, or maybe the last six championship matches, and beat them quite well at times, including I was in Wexford Park definitely twice when they beat them well. So Dublin are not going to fear going down to Wexford. They'll probably look forward to it. But I just think that on the field and the matchups and the way that, you know, Wexford will approach the game, I just think they'll have too much. Dublin have a really good defence, so I don't think Wexford are going to get, you know, they're not going to get easy scores or many scores, and it's going to be a tight game. But I just think that Wexford will have just too much, and it'll be Wexford by a couple of points, I would feel.
Okay, great stuff. The other big one this weekend is Cork and Clare in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. That's at 4 o'clock. They're lucky enough that there's a double header of hurling on this weekend. Tipperary and Limerick is the other one that's on television. I saw James E. O'Connor talking during the week, and he said you have to be realistic and say we don't have the depth of Kilkenny, Galway and Tip, and have defence, and defensively are we good enough? It's hard to see us coming out of Munster, but it's not inconceivable. And you often have to wonder about pundits playing mind games about their own county, but what he did say was the first game is massive. If you win that, you have two home games to come. It's possible they might get on a roll, but I just don't think our defence is good enough. I'm not sure that was something that was jumping out to me about Clare, the defence not being good enough.
I think the first point, I'm really surprised with the depth of the panel. I think, you know, Clare has, you know, a massive strength and depth.
Yeah, they should have, looking at,
you know, you would think that they would. So I'm surprised at that comment. The second comment, I think, is right. You know, the strength of their defence, particularly now that they're going conventional, you know, leaves an awful lot of space around their defence. It was very, very different when you have an extra body back there, or you have an extra defensive midfield coming into your defence. And being able to block up that space. And look, that was very evident last Sunday. You know, Kilkenny forwards had no space to play in. And, you know, one other aside to that, surely the argument is over, the discussion is over now about sweepers and all of that, because I didn't hear anybody giving out about it last Sunday in terms of the way Dublin played.
Yeah.
So back to your point, I think defensively that's an issue. I think one other issue as well, I think all along the league there, they were going with Cleary and McInerney at 3 and 6, and sometimes they might have switched them around. Now they're big players, but their lack of quickness, and Jack Brown and that as well, and Pat O'Connor, I think their lack of quickness in the back, particularly when there's a lot of space there, and like, you do not want space around Páirc Uí Chaoimh when you have the likes of Alan Cadigan and Pat Hogan and Harney and those are buzzing around the place. You do not want space around at that stage. So I do take James's point on that I think there may be too much space in the Clare defence, and they're strong players, but in May and June in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, you know, and the ball is absolutely flying off the side and there's a lot of space around the place, then I think your backline could be under serious pressure, and I do expect Clare backline to be under pressure.
Right, one of the things in the championship last year that was a big element of Cork's brilliant run was Nash's puckouts, and we saw Clare overthink it maybe a bit in the Munster final. I wasn't too critical of them at the time, because at least they tried to do something about it, where they retreated a lot of lads back to cover the space that he likes to put it into the half forward line, but then Nash just went short to the full back line and Clare didn't have enough pressure on quick enough. Now this year Clare in the league completely evolved that, and so they're dropping off the full back line halfway to the half forward line, and their half forward line is dropping back halfway to midfield. So if Nash was to go short, you have the likes of Shane O'Donnell and these fellas who are lighting on the cornerback immediately. So, like, I mean, is that element of surprise of Cork's puckouts, which was a huge weapon for them last year, is that been figured out now?
I think it would. I think most management teams would figure out that you're asking your players to hedge between some of their players and to jump on the player that's getting the ball and put enough pressure on him and force him to go along, because you have your players now back the field, and then you mop up the ball and you're working back down the field yourself. Bear in mind, Anthony Nash, you know, he's very, very accurate in his puckouts, either to space or to hand. When he's on song, he is very, very accurate, and they have probably practiced that. Obviously, Cork have quick ball carriers. I mean, Colm Splann and Coleman and that are very, very quick ball carriers. So when he strikes it, they can make 20 metres onto you, suck in the man that you've drawn back, pop the ball to a hand pass, and suddenly you're out into open field. And I thought that worked really, really well for Cork last year. surprisingly enough, I was I paid a lot of attention to what The Rock said on the show there, Willie, a number of weeks back. And, you know, it seems to be suggesting, and I've read it somewhere else as well, that Cork style is changing a little bit from last year, and their system of play is changing a little bit from last year. I was really surprised at that, because I just thought that for a couple of years that the Cork system of play, it was hard to define it. They were sort of relying on this, you know, a sort of generalisation of the Cork play and quick ball and all of that. But there needs to be a little bit more definition to it than that. And I thought Cork got all of that really, really well last year. But I was surprised that to hear The Rock say that you know, there seemed to be change in their system of play. And that is very, very hard to do. And I mean, it may not. This really suits the Shane Kingstons, and it really, really suits the Luke Meads and the Harnedys and all of these, because you're creating space and putting ball to space, running onto it. Very, very different game than just going direct in and out of that. So if that's the case, that they are changing and going more direct with the ball into the forwards and that, I think Clare then will have a great chance. But if Cork play with the system of play that they had last year, I just think that in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, that they may have a little bit too much for Clare. But I've said a couple of times already this year that to me, sort of Clare are dark horses. Look, they've won an All-Ireland in 2013. They've been sort of knocking on the door since. They've a new management in now, a little bit more experience under their belt at senior level, very, very different management at 21 and senior level. You know, if they're going to step up, they're going to have to step up now. Otherwise, I think this team may very well just slide away a little bit year on year. But I have concerns about their back line, particularly against Cork, some Cork forwards who are very, very efficient score getters if they get a win. So I think, look, Clare beat Cork in the league, I think, back in February or March. But I think that game was in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, if I'm not mistaken.
No, that was in Ennis, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, was it? Okay. If it was, then that makes it a little bit different. I think you could be actually right. Actually, all right, it wasn't Ennis. Now that you mention it, so I think it was 23-19 was the score. Then it was a decent score for Cork, and if it wasn't Ennis, an even more decent score. Yeah. But I think in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, with the forwards that they have, and provided that they haven't, you know, changed the system of play too much, I'd give it to Cork by a couple of points. But I also said a number of times this year that I just think that Clare are going to have to get it together. They have some really, really good players. They are going with a different style of play, about a big spine up their field, not dissimilar really to Dublin last Sunday, but with it, you know, with a little bit more dimension to their play and that. But I give it a Cork by a couple of points if they stick to the system play that they had last year.
I think you're right on Clare. I think that Clare, this is a do or die year for Clare. It's this new management second year. They've gone back a bit more of an orthodox style. They've tried the short game the last couple of years. Clare could start fading away if they could become an also-ran. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're already slipping out of maybe the top three or four bracket that would win in All-Ireland. But if they don't get out of Munster this year, are they in any conversation for All-Ireland winners like next year? You know, I think there's a lot of pressure on Clare this year to either, you know, step up to that mark.
Yeah, I think there is, Willie, and I do agree with you. I mean, they're a superb team to look at when they're on song, with some brilliant technical hurlers in it. But I think what they probably needed over the last maybe 2 years was maybe another one or two players to come in. I mean, they're still going back to the David Reedies and Shane Morris and that, and their team and that. And, you know, they were on the panel a number of years ago when they won the All-Ireland, but didn't make the starting 15. I think they really needed maybe two or three players. I thought that Niall Deasy actually would really make it.
Oh, yeah.
At this stage. I think he may be playing Sunday. I didn't have seen their team yet, but they probably needed a couple of more players to really stand up and grab the team and drive it on again, so that the likes of the Tony Kellys and the Colin Galvins and some of these are now, you know, just the foot soldiers and team as such. And I suppose that hasn't happened. Whereas when you look at likes of Cork, and Cork have brought in Coleman, they found a couple of players last year, and they've a chap actually centre back this year on Mahoney, and, you know, he may very well turn out to be a Pat McCaughey type player that, you know, is a strong physical player, and there's an awful lot more to him than you see in his actual performance. I always thought Pat McCaughey was a very underrated player, and when he wasn't there with Cork, they always knew he wasn't there. So I think that's the issue for Clare. They need to stand up now and be counted and look at performance. There's no better place to do that. Go down to Cork and beat them in their own backyard, and you know, stay here. We are serious contenders here and we're not going to be knocked off track.
Yeah, exactly. You're going for Cork slightly in that one. So we'll run through these ones quickly, Cheddar, because we're out of time. Kilkenny, Offaly and Nolan Park. In a few words, who do you think is going to win that one?
I know, it has to be Kilkenny, for just being realistic about it. You know, Offaly are not going to roll over here. And, since the 90s, they love playing Kilkenny and they have a good record against Kilkenny. Maybe not in recent years, but, you know, over a 30-year period, they have a good record of underage and that. But I just think that, you know, the game's at home, the game under their belt, they got a big test and a serious wake-up call last Sunday. I think Brian would be very, very dissatisfied with a lot of the performance and the nature of their play last Sunday. And I think he'll be, you know, fairly burying it into them this week. They have a settled team, but then again, if Colin Fennelly and Paul Murphy and Conor Fogarty to come into that team to give it a boost. So look, you'd have to give it to them. But I'd be interested to see with Kenny. I thought they're a little bit caught at the minute between playing possession hurling, that sort of precision possession hurling, versus hitting it long and fighting for it. And I think they need to figure out how they're going to adjust to a sweeper team, because at the end of the day, they're going to be playing with a sweeper as well. I thought they handled that really well against Wexford and Wexford Park, the league. Didn't think they'd done very well on it last Sunday. But I think against Offaly, you'd have to give it to them. And Offaly conceded a lot of goals last Sunday, could have conceded more. That could have been 8 goals or 9 goals from what I was seeing, and left a lot of space in their defence. I think Offaly have got to look at finding a number of quicker players. Incidentally, I think they have them. I think they have a lot of young players there that are quick. But I think Kevin might have put a strong team on the field last Saturday night against Galway, but I think he's going to have to look at a little bit more quickness in his team for the level of hurling that they are playing at.
Just quickly on Brian Cody, I hate criticising Brian Cody because of everything he's done in the game, and what the hell who am I to say criticise him? But from a management point of view, I remember being very critical when Seamus Callanan cleaned up in the All-Ireland and he refused to make a change, leaving loads of space in front of him for Seamus just to run amok and destroy him, and then to just leave Pádraig Walsh on Liam Rush there. She's put him out of his misery. It's very easy just to switch a corner back and a full back, and just at least sometimes when you're playing well as a forward and somebody moves across onto you, it's a confidence boost, but he gives you something different to have to think about. Cody doesn't really believe in making not only tactical changes, but he doesn't even let a defender who's getting a roasting off the hook.
And I suppose, look, there's pros and cons for all of these things, I suppose, and if you look back at the facts of these things, sometimes just, you know, good players will figure it out themselves. Now, I do agree with you in this situation, and you wonder then a little bit, you know, was Kilkenny management themselves a little bit confident about this game, because they were certainly this was very one-dimensional from Dublin, and you know, I don't think they've done something about it. And like, they had a spare defender there to do it. They could have double-teamed Liam Rush, and he at the very least put the ball on the floor, mop it up and walk it out with 2-1. And you know, they didn't do anything. I was surprised at that, because Liam Rush was central to every score for Dublin, and he was definitely central to them winning the match along with Conor Keeney, and they didn't do anything about that. So I was surprised at that, and I was also surprised, I think, that you know, they need to be a little bit more decided on, you know, if they're changing their style of play a little bit. I qualify everything I'm saying here by saying, who the hell am I to not question this, but to even discuss this with regard to Brian Cody's management. But that's what we're seeing, and I just thought that even the working out of the ball out of the defence, the short puck out, wasn't looked for with the same confidence that it should have been, or that it was, we'll say, in earlier matches with Kilkenny. And I think, you know, that they need to start to decide on that, you know, what type of play am I going with, or if they're going to mix it, at least the players know they're going to mix it.
Yeah, okay, brilliant stuff. Right, quickly, Joe McDonagh Cup, Antrim play Laois, Carlow play Meath and Kerry play Westmeath. Laois are having a disaster. They're absolutely vital, have to win this one. If they win their last three, they have an outside chance, but it's not looking good. And going up to Antrim away for a team that's low on confidence isn't ideal. You fancy Carlow to beat Meath, and you fancy, or Kerry and Westmeath is a great game in store there too.
Yeah, look, for ourselves, obviously this is knockout now at this stage, and you know, even if you did win it, you may very well not get there, but you can't dwell on those things. You've got to take it a game at a time. I think the team will have confidence that they went up there in the playoff for the league for Division 1B and beat Antrim up there. I'm not too sure if that game was in Dunlaoghaigh. I know the game's in Dunlaoghaigh on Sunday, but look, there's just nothing on these players' minds, or there shouldn't be this week, except, you know, whatever we need to do here, figure out how we're going to beat Antrim on Sunday and get ourselves back into this Joe McDonagh a Cup again. Because if they do and they win their last two matches against Meath and Carlow, you know, they'll depend on other teams maybe to help them out here. But if they did, they're back to where we started. How you get there makes no difference. As Brian Cody said last Sunday, it makes no difference. It's the score at the end of the game that counts. How yeah. it happens on the 7 minutes before that makes the difference. Well, there's no difference in this round robin thing. How you get to the final makes a difference. Just get there. And at the minute, Leeds simply have to win next Sunday up in Dunleigh against Antrim.
Yeah, so usually we go for our own county in this one, Cheddar. Do you fancy Carlow to beat Meath?
I'll never go against Leeds anyway, no. as you know, will it? Look, I think Carlow will be disrupted. They've lost a number of players from last week. I'm not too sure if they're double yellows or straight reds. If they're straight reds, they're down three players straight away. And some of those players are, you know, big players or central players for them. And that can be quite disruptive to them. So, Meath, you know, Meath are a sticky team and, you know, won't be simple there. You just think that Carlow would just have a little bit too much, and that their ambition, and particularly in terms of winning 2A and going up to 1B this year, and that, you know, should be enough to carry them through. So I'd have to give it to Carlow, but I won't be surprised for Meath to win it. And if I was to say that was based on what happened up in Antrim last week, may not be helpful to their team.
Right, okay. And in the Kerry Westmeath one, from a Leash point of view, maybe, I don't know who's better. It's probably Kerry better off to win, although both have won their, or no, Kerry lost their first game, did they, against Antrim, was it?
Yeah, they did, to Carlow, yeah.
Or to Carlow.
You know, the last worst game to Carlow. You probably look from Leash's perspective.
You want Kerry to win that.
You're probably hoping that Westmeath will win all their matches.
Oh, right,
Leash win all the remaining matches. And then it'll work out. I think that's maybe the best scenario for them. Look, it's a tricky one, you know, particularly with Kerry winning last Sunday and that as well. They'll feel the very same. We're back in the hunt here. And, you know, there's generally speaking, not a whole lot between these teams. There's very little between them, and they will take points off of one another. But you know, I think Westmeath, I certainly the Westmeath game against Leash, the way they set themselves up and that, you know, I think won the game for them. I think they actually changed their team around a little bit again, you know, last time out. So it's hard to call that one, really. I just think maybe Westmeath might just have a little bit at the minute. But Kerry are an unreal team. When they get their tails up, they're just really, really go for it. And even in the course of the game, they get their tails up in the game, they really go for the game. And they smell the game and they really go for it. So if that happens to them, you know, I won't be surprised me either if Kerry get a win here.
Cheddar, thanks very much. Talk to you next week.
Cheers, Wally.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. Let it go.